Chapter 3. Do not attach status to worthiness. Read superficially. This paragraph of the Tao Te Ching seems to be all about a social order whose dictates are way out of date for people of the 20th century. A modern professor of social politics would just give a shrug, shake his head, and say, "As far as I'm concerned, you can put the Tao Te Ching back in your bookcase. It's antiquated and far too conservative for modern times." We wouldn't follow this advice, however, because when we look more closely at what is said, we understand that this third chapter is addressed to rulers. Rulers of a kind no longer known in our modern times. Rulers who belonged to and lived entirely on the basis of the new life. The Tao Te Ching proposes a system of government that would be impossible to apply in our era, a system no one would want to use and against which people would rebel. We are concerned here with a system of government, a socio-political strategy belonging to a period long ago, when China could still genuinely be called the Heavenly Realm. It is a system we believe was last used, and that in an experimental way, by the mysterious Akhenaten in ancient Egypt. Akhenaten's reign, however, did not last very long. It was destroyed by the intrigues of an evil priesthood. Anyway, though not obsolete, this socio-political paragraph from the Tao is no longer applicable in our times, unless perhaps as guidelines for parents to use in the bringing up of their children. Even so, we would like to make an analysis of the third chapter because it gives such a clear image of a prehistoric period in the development of the human life wave, a period much further back than 2,500 years ago when the Tao is reputed to have been written down. This is proof that the Tao is many thousands of years old. Let us return then to the beginning of the most recent epoch, the Aryan epoch, at which time the remnant of fallen humanity was again brought into manifestation in the world of antitheses. This remnant was the group of those whom it had not been possible to liberate during the previous epoch, and who therefore could not be brought back to the original life. Though we speak of a remnant, we are nevertheless concerned with people who were once children of God. Foundations, therefore, had to be laid to provide a possibility of returning to that former state, and that is why this remnant was surrounded by the Universal Brotherhood with the greatest concern and care at the dawn of its new existence in the nature of death. Many messengers of the Universal Brotherhood, many of those who had already been saved, therefore mingled with humankind at this time of new beginning, appearing as kings, rulers, and priests. All these authorities together formed a sublime brotherhood in the service of the last remnant. All the participants in this brotherhood were linked internationally, and they governed humankind in its new endeavor in keeping with an internationally coordinated system, the socio-political system described in the third chapter of the Tao. Suppose you were such a ruler, then you would be aware of the grave dangers inherent in delusion and the law of antitheses. When a person seeks liberation on the horizontal level, and these efforts reveal to him the reality of his imprisonment, yet he nevertheless persists in his activities, he will accelerate the interchange of antitheses. Then he will work his way even deeper into the morass of death and crystallization. He will entangle himself even more in the essence of self-preservation and conflict. So, imagine a group of people had been entrusted to your guidance. People you knew had just awoken from a cosmic night after a terrible fall. People you knew possessed a rosebud, while you understood from experience the delusions and pitfalls of dialectics. What would you have done? Surely you would have done your best to ensure that their culture did not develop along dialectical lines. With your utmost care, you would have guided the people in the direction you saw as the only one possible. possible, you would have protected them from the archons of the aeons, from the influences of the nature of death. In everything you did for the people, you would have kept your eyes fixed on that one primary goal, the return home. But the people would not have been aware of that goal any more than a child who had just entered the world once again. The people would only have been aware of, I am alive, and they would have had to live out of their soul state. As such, they would have been sufficient unto themselves. Now suppose you were such a person and, in the spiritual school, separated from matter, you had been entrusted to our care. What would we do? As far as possible, we would try to keep you away from degeneration as it exists in the cosmos. We would not try to keep you ignorant, but we would try to keep you untouched by any temptation to fall, by encircling you with pure vibrations. And in this period, we would try to bring about the great work of self-emptying in the service of the imperishable rose. Now that the end of another day of manifestation has almost been reached once again, and an attempt is being made to enable as many entities as possible to participate in the third magnetic field, our thoughts are naturally drawn to the beginning of this day of manifestation, when the Brotherhood, striking while the iron was hot, tried in the same way to help as many people as possible, and with great success. In the mystery temples of the Brotherhood of Shambhala, tens of thousands were helped on the path of liberation. The third chapter of the Tao contains instructions for the kings, priests, and rulers who worked at the dawn of the Aryan manifestation. Do not attach status to worthiness, then the people will not quarrel. Fame and honor are common incentives to action. It is usual ally, very easy to trade on human ambition. The depths to which our so-called civilization has descended can be measured by all the titles and knighthoods, all the rewards for successes achieved by ambition. And look at the quarrels caused by ambitious people, all jostling with each other to gain some prize or other. Economic methods are based on such competition, and wars are caused by it. That is why humankind's original leaders would never have exalted themselves on account of any individual merit they may have possessed. They took care to avoid anything that could have given rise to jealousy. Merit, genuine merit, can only be spiritual, and the way to that merit is open to all. Neither was any value attached to things like precious metals, for instance, that were difficult to come by. It is known that ancient peoples had no lust for gold, the metal of the sun, purely and simply because nothing could be had in exchange for it. Rarity was never made into the basis of an economic system, and in this way, theft was prevented. In those times, theft was unknown. No member of the Brotherhood cherished any earthly desires, and thus no child human being could be confused by a bad example. By such measures, the sages kept hearts empty of desire. They took care that the products necessary for bodily sustenance were shared out fairly, and careful eye was kept on each person's inclinations. Any influences originating from discarnate forces were neutralized, and people's health was cared for assiduously. Poverty and disease were unknown, and in the temples care was taken to ensure that the power field emitted a good atmosphere. In this way, the people were preserved from any possible degeneration, and at the same time, all harmful desires were neutralized. Any enemy was powerless. Thus, for thousands of years, a state of life was preserved which, seen from a dialectical point of view, was ideal. The few entities in those times who were in the grip of the forces of degeneration were unable to cause any disturbance in that power field. Thus the Brotherhood of Shambhala lived in the daily practice of not doing, and the results were wholly beneficial. But those times have passed. After the great harvest that took place at the dawn of the Aryan epoch, matters took their ordinary course until now. The Brotherhood always adapted itself to every situation so as to continue with its work of salvation until this very hour. We may be very thankful that the method of not doing as practiced by us has lost none of its power, because it means we can apply this social paragraph to our present situation in the spiritual school of the Golden Rosy Cross. If, as workers, we keep to these guidelines, then together we will be able to lead the pupils to the goal with the minimum of trouble. It must be emphasized that this ancient gospel, this compendium of the universal doctrine, is still valid as a practical guide to the holy work. Just as it has been throughout all the ages, so it is now. That is why we want to draw your attention to the final verses of the third chapter. Always he sees to it that the people remain innocent and without desires. If this does not entirely succeed, he ensures that those who are not innocent do not dare to agitate, and he practices Wu Wei, and then there is nothing in which he does not rule well. In practice, this means that bona fide pupils of the spiritual school are kept together and nourished by a properly functioning power field. As regards the state of their pupilship and its results, they are protected by the power field. In view of all this, the guardians of the power field do not per-emit alien influences hostile to the work to enter the power field. Any who dare to attack the power field from within are ejected without compunction. And if those who remain within the power field harbor any hostile intentions, care is taken that they neither dare nor are able to give vent to them. One might ask whether something could be judged as hostile when in fact it was not, or when it may even have been in the interests of the power field. One might also wonder whether the position adopted by the leaders and guardians of the power field is too authoritarian. But if the guardians of the power field stand in Wu Wei, in not doing, in impersonal service to the Brotherhood, there. Do not attach status to worthiness. Can be nothing in which they do not rule well, and any ensuing situation will not be dialectical, but positive in the new esoteric sense. What will prove that this is the case? The facts, the results. Look at the facts, and you will know.